I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a federal judge is set to decide whether schools must notify the parents of female athletes if their child is about to compete against a biological boy. Plus, new details on the effort to recall Seattle's socialist mayor and a public library expose by our friend Savannah Hernandez will have you reaching for a Kindle. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's Undivided. POD.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Should female athletes get a choice or at least be informed about whether they're about to compete against a biological boy in the cases where it's not particularly obvious? That is the decision that a federal judge in Tacoma is about to make in the case of Callie Keeler. So this is a story originally broken on Undivided. Callie Keeler, a high school wrestler, female wrestler in Puyallup, wrestled, unbeknownst to her, a biological boy, ended up being, in her words, sexually assaulted on the mat. This case ended up resulting in charges against two school officials for failure to report after Callie Keeler had come to them, said what happened. They sat on it for 2 months until we exposed it here on Undivided. So this has led to a lawsuit, Callie Keeler and her family, against a long list of Washington state officials, including the Washington Interscholastic Activities Association, the Washington Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Reichdahl himself in his official and individual capacity, as well as the Puyallup School District and their Title IX coordinator, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there was an emergency hearing in this case in Tacoma, in federal court in Tacoma yesterday. Now, it gets a little bit into legalese, but I think it's important that we follow this case, and a decision really could come down at any moment. This is specifically seeking an emergency protection order in U.S. District Court. And so this isn't a hearing on the merits of the case. This is a hearing and was a hearing on a couple things. First of all is standing. You always have to prove that you have standing, essentially, to be able to sue for what you're suing for. And then it was seeking emergency, essentially, restraining orders. Callie Keeler is about to start school again. She wants there to be an emergency protective order so that, one, if she is going to be competing against a biological boy in either soccer, which is the sport that she's about to start, or in wrestling in the winter, that the school district must inform her that she's going to be competing against a biological boy. So a situation like what happened last December doesn't happen again. So we only have audio. There's no video allowed in federal court, but I want to play for you a couple key parts of the arguments that were made yesterday. So the first, of course, is standing. So this is Callie Keeler's attorney with the Alliance Defending Freedom arguing why she clearly has standing in this case to bring an action.
KM will be back at school in 2 weeks and needs to be in a safe, non-discriminatory environment. And we don't hear the state to be arguing that she lacks standing to pursue relief for that claim. For parental rights, Mirabelli v. Bonta just addressed this issue, held parents have standing when they are the object of the regulation at issue. Here, what we have is policies preventing parents from getting notice and having an opportunity to opt their children out of a situation that implicates our health and safety. Then if you turn to the Title IX athletics claim, there are three different ways you can find standing. First, past events are predictive of future events. Last year, in the very first wrestling tournament of the season, KM was matched against a biological male. We know that there have been two males on the team. Neither of them has graduated. There's no reason to believe they won't be wrestling. It's easy to predict that this the same or a similar thing would happen again. Withdrawing from sports, as KM has done at her mother's direction, is a reasonable response to the risk of having to be put in this position again. KM has to participate under policies that she contends are unlawful and violate Title IX.
Yeah. So not only does she have standing, but the Lions Defending Freedom is saying that this is an emergency. We need a decision from you on a protective order, because without that decision, Callie is not going to participate in soccer in the fall because she's worried about being surprised with a male opponent and potentially getting assaulted or hurt, as she alleges that she was in December. So this is the government's attorney's argument against standing.
We give the cases in our brief of Clapper, Lujan, and Lyons that requires any plaintiffs seeking Article III injunctive relief to show standing by demonstrating injury that is actual or imminent, not conjectural, and certainly impending. Plaintiffs want a determination within a week because KMK is going to play soccer next week. There is nothing in the record indicating there is any transgender soccer player in the state of Washington, in the Puyallup School District, or Hedder School. As for wrestling, the assumption that the record shows that they're going to play this year just doesn't exist in the record.
What a stupid counter argument. So you're saying, oh, there's nothing on the record saying that there's a transgender, you know, that there's a boy playing soccer. Yeah, there was nothing on the record saying there was a boy that she was going to wrestle against either. That's kind of the point. She was sort of surprised with it. And even her coach didn't know that that boy was actually a boy. So that is, therein lies the issue, right? And it was, I love this federal judge who just knocked down the government attorney, knocked him down a peg.
And I think it's pretty reasonable concern that there's going to be some additional wrestling matches between Rogers High School and Emerald Ridge. They're in the same district. I think there might be the same size of schools, if I'm not mistaken. So my understanding is they quite often play each other in different sports, which would include wrestling.
That might be, Your Honor, but we don't have nothing in the record to indicate these two identified transgender wrestlers are even still on the team or even want to wrestle anymore. The last thing we have on the record for the first identified wrestler is that she dropped out of the state tournament. And the second one is not even in her weight class. So there's not the reasonable certainty. That's a hypothetical. That is our position there.
As you might get the sense, I don't know if that's a winning argument on your part. So anything further on standing?
Moving on. It's like, yeah, I don't think that's a winning argument. Like, there's two trans wrestlers. We know that. She had to wrestle against one. The other one is just up a weight class. So if she doesn't make weight, she's going to have to wrestle against that one. So you're just, it's not theoretical. This has happened. It's not hypothetical. And so the judge is just like, moving on. So then came the arguments on one of the key factors of this. And I think this, you know, I'm not saying that this emergency injunction would impact every single female athlete in the state, but certainly it would lend credence to that happening down the road. So there's this parental rights argument that's wrapped up in all of this, that Callie Keeler, but also Callie Keeler's parents, should have been informed that she would be wrestling a boy, that that is part of, you know, essentially what the U.S. Supreme Court very recently ruled as part of parental rights, knowing about things that could pose a mental health risk to your child or a physical risk to your child. So here's the lawyer with ADF.
We know that there are two transgender athletes on the Emerald Ridge team. Part of the problem is that Ms. Brown is not getting notice. And so she doesn't know, she can't be assured that there aren't others on soccer teams where KM would be playing against them. That's why KM is not playing soccer this fall. If they want to just provide us notice that there are no transgender athletes involved in the soccer program, that would help, and she'd be able to act accordingly.
Yeah, and that's really all they're asking. Like, hey, for the purposes of this emergency protective order, just tell the school to tell our client whether there's going to be a boy playing soccer this year. So then she can decide as a teenage girl whether she gets to do something she loves this fall or whether she has to sit out because she doesn't know who's going to be playing with her and she doesn't want to and shouldn't have to compete against a biological boy. And then the attorney for the government and the judge went back and forth on this issue.
Mirabelli does, though, give parents the right to have information that potentially affects their child's mental health. Would you agree with that or not?
Mirabelli did say that a parent's right to raise her child includes the right to participate in significant decisions about her child's mental health, including the right not to be shut out. And so what was at issue in Mirabelli was a California policy that prevented school officials from disclosing information about a student's mental health, there they said gender dysphoria, to their own parents.
So is it a far stretch to say if I have the right to know about my child's mental health, I would also have the right to know about my or decisions that affect my child's physical health? I mean, is that a far stretch?
That would be a question for a Supreme Court, but I'm certainly they could try to make that argument.
I think Justice Barrett said, hey, this is something that's based on the nation's history and tradition, and that parents' ability to know about their children's upbringing is found within the nation's history and tradition.
They certainly found that right to exist, the nation's history and tradition, but what was not found
I think Justice Kagan, even in her dissent, mentioned to the effect that, hey, I think there probably are some parental rights that are guaranteed by substantive due process.
Your Honor, I'm not arguing parents don't have a substantive due process right to control the upbringing of their child under the 14th Amendment. There has been recognition of that right dating back a century. But what's also been recognized is that that right is not boundless.
That attorney for the government did not come prepared to play with the big boys. I mean, that judge was running circles around him when it came to court precedent, when it came to relevant rulings that came out very recently from the United States Supreme Court on the issue of parental rights. So listening to the hearing, I felt as if Callie Keeler's attorneys did a very good job at articulating, at the very least, standing. And also that there is a time-sensitive nature to all of this that would require some sort of protective order so that Callie Keeler can participate in athletics for the school year that's coming up in just a matter of days. And if you get a federal judge in Tacoma to agree to that, I think it bodes well certainly for the case moving forward and could have some pretty important implications for female athletes in Washington State and across the country. So that is the latest on that. We're in touch with the ADF this morning because when you have an emergency hearing like this, they're going to issue a ruling on it probably in 48 hours. So that ruling could come down in the middle of our show. We don't know, but we will have it for you as soon as it does. All right, keeping on the legal front, I just want to update you on the effort to recall Seattle's socialist mayor. Poor Katie Wilson, you almost have to feel bad for her 8 months on the job, already facing the potential of a recall. You'll be reminded that two citizens filed this recall, which is a formal process, against the mayor for dereliction in her duties, specifically having to do with the response to the Bite of Seattle shooting, the decision to force a resignation from former Seattle Police Chief Sean Barnes, the situation with the pimps and gun battles up in North Aurora, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, open air drug use running rampant. So as I said previously, this is a legal process. You can't just put a recall on a ballot because you don't like the socialist mayor who's in her first job that she's ever had in her life. So we just got an update from the King County Prosecutor's Office about how this will proceed. And I just want to let you know, because everybody's very interested in this, what's going to happen. So the King County Superior Court, a civil presiding judge, has assigned this case now. It'll go to Judge Patrick Oishi. He is going to handle the issue of the recall. The hearing date and time will be 9 a.m. Monday, August 31st. So that'll be a week and a half from now. And at that hearing, they'll determine whether the acts that are laid out in the recall charge satisfy the legal criteria. So if that's decided, and by the way, the hearing is open to the public, so you can go in and watch it. Also, Mayor Wilson or an attorney representing her is welcome to attend. So are the citizens who filed the recall to make their arguments and participate in the hearing process. Neither are required to attend. I find it very unlikely that Katie Wilson is going to show up there in court, but certainly there'll be some sort of attorney with the city there. And then if the judge decides, yes, this can proceed, then there is a signature gathering phase, and then it will head to the ballot for voters. So there's still a lot of steps to get through. I've already said, if we go back to the allegations that they make in the recall, I think some of them fall flat. Because it has to be like specific misfeasance, malfeasance. And they mentioned, for instance, the open-air drug market at 12th and Jackson. It says it continues to pose fears of public safety in the neighborhood. The area's condition remains the same, including recent shootings and stabbing occurring in the CID neighborhood. Those existed. Those predated Katie Wilson. As much as I think she's doing a horrible job, I don't think that you can blame Katie Wilson for issues that predate her by a long shot. And that she's only had 8 months to fix, so to speak, that other mayors haven't been able to fix in 4 years. The part that I wonder if it'll actually stick is the agreed upon poor response to a mass shooting and the ousting of the police chief. I mean, you have, you know, most of the city council members at this point saying that this is a train wreck and that she's just not fit, basically, for lack of a better phrase, to lead the city. So August 31st, set your calendars and watches, 9 a.m. All right, coming up next, violent crime rates down significantly nationwide. Crime is also trending in the right direction in Washington state. What is the reason for that? And also, I'll get into some of the crime stats that I don't particularly believe. First, I'm always trying to save you guys money because I ask you to give us $5 of your hard-earned money every month to support the show. So I'm like, I got to try to save you money in return. First Mark Insurance. If you haven't tried First Mark Insurance and taken the First Mark Challenge, I highly recommend you do so because, first of all, you're going to get some peace of mind. You know, we've had undivided viewers and listeners who've taken the First Mark Challenge and they were basically told, hey, you've got great insurance. I'd stay with what you have. And then they leave knowing that they dealt with an honest company and that they double checked and that they have great insurance that covers their needs. But for most undivided viewers and listeners, they walk away having saved hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year on their insurance. And that was the case for Mike and I. We just got our renewal a couple months ago. We saved $2,000. We didn't lift a finger. They just emailed us and said, hey, we checked everything again. And great news, we can save you $2,000 and you're getting the insurance you already have. So it's like, okay, great. Now I'm using that for my annual Florida vacation. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. And as always, tell them that Brandy sent you. All right, national crime stats and Washington state crime stats are out and things look really good. See, we do positive news on this show. You think I'm just negative? Absolutely not. I like a little positivity. So the U.S. Department of Justice releasing some, we'll just go over the top line statistics nationally, because I'm sure you're going to see that all over the national news today. Violent crime down nearly 10%. Murder down nearly 20%. That's amazing. And that's the largest year-to-year decrease since the FBI started tracking these statistics in 1936. Robbery down 20%, property crimes down about 12%. And so, yeah, I mean, that is significant. That murder rate is just astonishing. And I'm sure you'll find people trying to twist the data in all sorts of different ways. I have to believe that some of that has to do with the crackdown on illegal immigration. And I'm not saying you don't have U.S. citizens who commit murder and violent crime and robbery and property crime, but I don't know if we'll ever be able to get data that fully appreciates or explains the benefit to public safety that President Trump's, first of all, closure of the southern border and deportation of violent criminals. Because remember, you know, we've had a lot of violent criminals, even in our state and in Seattle, that have been deported that had murder rap sheets in their home countries, that had committed rapes here, that had committed strong-armed robberies here. And yeah, when you're living a life of crime like that, you're not just doing it once, you're doing it more than once, usually. And so you got him out of our country, and that definitely is going to help the crime rate. So I give President Trump, and also I think this idea of, you know, in D.C., President Trump brought the National Guard into D.C., and you had people on both sides of the political aisle in D.C. say, I've never felt safer. So prioritizing law and order matters. That stuff matters. And having a president from the top down that says that we're not going to allow violent criminals to take over our country, that stuff matters. So what's happening in Washington state? The annual crime report is out here. And there are also some promising statistics here. So crimes against persons down 7%. Crimes against property, decrease of 21%. Crimes against society, I'll get into more of that in a moment, down about 1%. But the decrease, keep an eye on that one, the property crime decrease. Those are the only kind of crime stats I don't really believe in. But if we look at the data, so again, this is 2025 because obviously 2026 isn't over yet. Theft offenses. This is the one that I just never can really believe because we have so few police officers per capita here. I think a lot of people stopped reporting theft. I think a lot of people just stopped reporting property crimes. Like if your window gets broken or something, you know, are you calling the cops? For a lot of people, I'm not going to wait 8 hours for a cop to come. And so when you see those decreases in theft and vandalism, damage, etc., I don't know. I have a hard time buying those numbers. Like the only number you can't fudge really is homicides. Because you got a body or you don't have a body, or you have a murder or missing person, a presumed dead or you don't. Now, motor vehicle theft offenses, This one is not a surprise to me, and I think we can correlate this very specifically with the successful Let's Go Washington initiative to restore reasonable police pursuits that was adopted on a bipartisan basis in the legislature. Because this was one of the primary issues. Our number of motor vehicle thefts was through the roof when they decided not to let cops here pursue, get into pursuits with people driving stolen vehicles. And I think also motor vehicle theft is another one that's sort of hard to fudge, because you might not report it to cops if your window gets broken in your car, but you're going to call the cops if your car is missing, you know? Like, we know motor vehicle thefts is pretty accurate. So that is a stunning drop in motor vehicle thefts from 34,000 vehicles stolen in 2024 to about 20,000 in 2025. Still way too much. But I think this year, when we get the stats for the entirety of 2026, I think you're going to see that number plummet as well. Because that's common sense. Like, oh, they knew they could steal a car. And they could drive it away. And even if they had a cop, lights and sirens behind them, that cop wouldn't be able to pursue them. So they'd just leave. It happened all the time. So I think that's a really good indicator that, you know, we fixed a problem, and Let's Go Washington fixed a problem that needed to be fixed. So that's good. Violent crime also down in Washington state, decrease overall in violent crime of 13%. Murder down 20%, very consistent with what the numbers are nationally. And obviously, that's a great thing. I'm not going to, I don't think you can fudge those numbers very easily. So murder offenses, assault offenses, robbery offenses, all of that is very good news. I'd like to see robbery drop even more. 5-year violence trends, as we just continue through here. When you talk about violent offenses, the trend since 2022 is downwards. So this is a 4-year trend, about to be a 5-year trend. There was a significant jump during that pandemic period, 2021 to 2022. But I'd also say that was also during the radical police defunding period, where you saw from 2020 to 2022, when they were all cops suck, we hate cops, defund the police, take it easy on criminals, treat people different if they're black. You saw, whoop, spike. This common sense. And then when even some reasonable Democrats said, hey, maybe we should lay off of that. And then you get President Trump back in and all this stuff happening and crime starts to go down. Now, the only number that's up is assaults on police officers. And that's pretty disappointing. It's not up a lot, but it's up enough to be significant. It's up about 3%. And so while you have a lot of crime statistics going down, assaults on police officers has had an uptick this year. I think in order to really call that a trend, we'll have to look at the numbers in 2026, because it's kind of ebbed and flowed a little bit. And that 3% difference, although, you know, one more officer assaulted is a big deal. But, you know, I think we need to see what the trend is over time. So here's what Governor Bob Ferguson is saying about this. The latest report on crime in Washington state shows crime significantly down, dropping across all categories. That includes declines of over 20% for murders and property crimes. And he's not going to, but he should give President Trump a little credit for that because of the deportations of murderers and rapists. But of course, he's not going to do that. He said, this improvement reflects the hard work of law enforcement professionals across our state. Thank you. We still rank last in number of law enforcement officers per capita. In my inaugural address, I made it clear that I would not sign a budget without $100 million for hiring officers. I secured that funding, and we've now awarded almost $60 million to 25 cities and counties. But of course, he's lying about that. When he characterizes it, I made clear that I would not sign a budget without $100 million for hiring officers. That's what he says. But of course, we know that Democrats snuck language in that wasn't about hiring police officers at all. And Bob Ferguson has been questioned about that for more than a year. Here's Chris Daniels with Como News pointing that out to him in May of 2025.
The language that was ultimately signed does not force local jurisdictions to hire police officers. What can you say about that agreement? To not only allocate the money, but not force local jurisdictions to actually use the money to hire cops.
I'm very confident we're going to see a renewed focus and increase in the hiring of law enforcement officers.
Yeah, but they really haven't. And it was because the new language that was added was intended by lawmakers who hate cops to make it difficult to set such a high burden for localities to get that money to hire police officers. And they opened it up to a bunch of other things, non-armed, you know, first responders and therapists or whatever it is. I mean, it's outrageous. And that's not from me. State Rep Natasha Hill, a Democrat, said that they intentionally made it so that it was difficult to spend that $100 million on hiring new cops when she was at a candidate forum earlier this month.
What we did on that $100 million that Bob Ferguson shoved down our throats, we put guardrails around it. So what can you use it for? You have to do all this public health and safety stuff. You have to raise taxes in your community. You're not just getting free money from the government. We're going to monitor and regulate it. Law enforcement. Why? Because we know your history is slave patrols.
Yeah, because of some lawmakers who think that cops are of the modern era equate to slave patrols. It took more than a year for them to actually use any of that money to go to award any grants at all. This was from the State Standard back in March. First grants awarded under Washington's new $100 million hiring program. And in the months leading up to those first grants, law enforcement communities and entities were like, hey, what happened to that $100 million? Nobody has gotten any of it yet. And so they ended up handing out their first grants to the Kent Police Department and to the Black Diamond Police Department. But there's been a few others since then, but Jason Rantz, as he pointed out on Seattle Red, you know, Auburn, for instance, they got $3.9 million. They didn't hire any cops with it. Zero cops for $3.9 million. King County got $15 million. They hired three cops with it. So, like, when Bob Ferguson says and continues to say ad nauseum for the last year and a half, I wouldn't sign a budget without $100 million for hiring officers. No, you signed a budget that had $100 million for public safety-related things. And it could be virtually anything. I mean, you could even use that money for, like, responding to natural disasters, essentially, like emergency management. Because the bar is so high to be able to use it at all, but to be able to use it to hire police officers. And Democrats did that. I don't necessarily just blame Bob Ferguson, because the original thing he proposed was more about hiring cops. And then the real cop haters, not that he's not one of them, but the ultra cop haters who compare them to the KKK and slave patrols and call them fascists, they're like, well, let's water that down a little bit. So, yeah, but crime stats heading in the right direction. I think President Trump has a lot to do with that. And, you know, joint investigations. Don't forget about all that. You know, people are kind of unhinged about ICE and deportations, but there's been a ramp up in DEA investigations and cooperation, and the local jurisdictions are more than happy to cooperate with the DEA. The Department of Homeland Security has been helping with some of the sex trafficking and human trafficking operations. ATF has been assisting with local jurisdictions as well. So when you have a tough-on-crime president who wants to utilize the federal government and all its different bureaus to target crime and criminals, that's helpful. And I think it's helpful just to say that it's a good thing, okay? I asked you in our daily subscriber show poll, you know, pointing out the statistics, and I said, you know, crime's down. Do you feel safer this year than last year? Yes, no, or no change? Nicole, do you feel safer this year than last year? Yes, no, or no change?
I guess I'd say no change for okay. me.
Do you feel safe?
I do, but I still think it's scary to go downtown Seattle.
I'm not going down there unless right? I have to.
And yeah, there are still some home and burglary things that make me a little nervous. But it's not. But none of the safety issues I have would be because of lack of cops. Because I don't think that's necessarily contributing to it. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. My answer is no, only because I've been targeted so much in the last year. And I don't think that's the kind of crime stat they're right. really looking at, is like, you know, assaults on journalists, X, Y, Z, et cetera. So my answer is no. 65% of you say no. 30% say no change. And just 5% say you feel safer. And that's interesting, because it's totally opposite from what the crime stats show. Linda says, I don't feel any safer in Seattle. I think their stats are skewed because they either don't respond to a crime or just don't take a report because they know it won't get prosecuted. Brian says, how much property crime goes unreported in places like Seattle and Portland? Because the odds you'll actually get an officer to show up in a timely manner are slim to none. Yeah. So that's why I've never really bought those statistics, because you don't have to report something like that. But you get your car stolen, you're reporting it. You get stabbed, you're reporting it. Mm-hmm. You get robbed, you're reporting it. Vivian, crime reporting is down, not crime. Yo said, I said no because it feels like, at least in the greater Seattle area, that we not only don't have enough officers to respond, but there's no room in the jails and the prosecutors aren't charging the criminals. So, of course, it looks better. The numbers are skewed. Yeah, a lot of declines as well. You know, one thing to get arrested, another thing to get charged.
I'd also say that they must have solved that Kia Hyundai thing because I see a lot of them on the roads now. And people are back to buying them and not getting warned.
Well, yeah. And then it's harder to get away with stealing them, right? So, all right. We'll get to our segment Unbelievable coming up next. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, RHAWA.org. It is Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. They do a lot of different things. They help landlords on an individual basis, you know, with forms and screening, but also just navigating the changing rules and regulations. On a broader scale, they're down in Olympia advocating for public policy during the session and outside the session, and then they're fighting for private property rights. They've got some key cases going on right now, and they have events all year long that are pretty entertaining. I'm going to be doing one with them in October, talking about how the media covers housing issues. So RHAWA.org to become a member, RHAWA.org. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right. So Seattle Socialist Mayor wanted about $500 million. Yeah, $500 million for a new local library levy. It passed. It was Proposition 1 with 75% of the vote.
Love.
If you're wondering why Seattle is doomed, a new property, a new levy, $500 million to fund public libraries, and 75% of people voted for it. Unreal. So you've got about $230 million that'll be for maintaining hours, programming, hiring more security for reasons that will become obvious momentarily. Another $134 million will go to building maintenance, hiring more janitors, the reason for which will become clear momentarily, repairs and renovations. Oh, and then $2.4 million toward creating an Office of Inclusion and Belonging. An Office of Inclusion and Belonging. That's a great use of $2.4 million, A+. So our friend Savannah Hernandez, in fact, I had dinner with her when she was in town doing this story with Turning Point USA. She was here to do an expose on the Seattle public library system, in part because there was, at the time, this pending massive levy that was going to be on the ballot, but also because it has just become essentially a magnet for homeless drug addicts and people who want to watch porno.
This is Savannah Hernandez in front of Seattle's $165 million public library. Now, this library is 11 stories, has 10,000 windows. It's the most expensive library in all of Washington, and it is unfortunately overrun with the homeless. Now, the homeless issue is just one aspect of this library, and I was reading reviews, and people have talked about getting nearly attacked by the homeless, how there are foul odors in this library, that rats are often in the area due to the trash and junk collecting around the building. People state they've been harassed by the homeless here, and even the restrooms are unusable due to the homeless utilizing them to bathe or, in some cases, shoot up drugs. Now, I can attest to all of this because I went and I did a walkthrough of this library myself, and I witnessed several women, especially women with their children, straight up turn the other way and refuse to use the elevator because of how many homeless men were trying to get on it, or straight up turn around and walk the opposite direction because somebody was having some type of drug-induced psychosis. Now, another crazy thing about this library is on the fifth floor, they offer free fentanyl test strips and injectable Narcan with syringes that are open and available for anyone to just come pick up and take, including children. These objects can be found on a table and they are very accessible, so a curious child could potentially come and pick this up very easily at the Seattle Downtown Public Library.
Okay. The state of Washington is investigating We Heart Seattle for mishandling used needles that it's picking up in public parks, yet the Seattle Public Library just has needles hanging out, not locked up, that a kid could grab. I mean, it's absolutely insane. And that should explain to you why they need all this money to hire more security and to hire more janitors, because it's disgusting. More on the homeless activity there.
He saw a homeless guy talking to himself, many of the homeless watching what we'll call interesting videos on the computers and taking naps inside. This is the location that recently installed those special air sensors, by the way, because drug use is so high in their bathrooms here, with one visitor writing that while he was at this location, he began feeling dizzy and weird and ended up leaving because he felt that the homeless guy that was sitting behind him was smoking fentanyl.
Who wants to go to that library? I mean, who wants to go to that library? It really is just homeless people watching porn on the computer, taking naps in nooks and crannies all over the library, doing drugs in the bathroom, so much so that they had to install sensors to make sure it didn't reach dangerous levels. You've got visitors getting so dizzy, they feel like they have to leave, and we're spending $500 million on it. And then there's this other issue. So the Seattle Library is very distinctive architecturally. It's got all those little weird windows. Well, it turns out, so think about $500 million, they say, to fund all the library system in this new levy. But they're facing a huge expense ahead because they need to replace the windows that are kind of failing around the downtown library.
By the way, just for regular maintenance and upkeep purposes, all 10,000 windows in this library are due to be replaced, but they can only be replaced by the one company in Italy that created them. So in total, it's going to be about $300 million to replace the windows.
Each one is $30,000. Each, you guys, each one is $30,000. And they can only get them from this place in Italy? So they just passed a $500 million levy, nearly $500 million, $300 million. They need $300 million just to replace the windows on the one library. And you wouldn't think, like, at some point when you're building this library, that it would have come up like, hey, here's the lifespan on these windows. When you go to replace them, it's going to cost you $300 million. What, so you can have a fancy place for the homeless to shoot up drugs? Absolutely outrageous. 75% of Seattle voters voted to give that disaster of a library system another $500 million. Great work by our friend Savannah Hernandez. Just absolutely outrageous. All right, we'll get to national news coming up next. First, there's been a rash of reports about fake contractors ripping off homeowners. In fact, the Department of Homeland Security says it's now investigating this. It's like a multi-state crime ring. The common denominator seems to be a guy with an Irish accent, at least in Washington State, come up, say, hey, I can fix this on your roof for like, you know, $1,000 or $2,000. Then it gets all torn out. Same, you get these driveway scams occasionally where they'd rip your driveway out and they're like, oh, it's going to be a lot more money and you have no choice because you have no driveway. So don't deal with them. Why are you dealing with shitty contractors anyway? Walking up to your door, we have advertisers that can help you with this. Valentine Roofing, wonderful advertisers on our show. Why are you laughing at me, Nicole? What? Why are you laughing at me? I said shady, not shitty. Oh. I said shady. But both work. Shady. Sorry. 206 Roofing. Right now they're doing priority scheduling. So before all the rain starts and the rush starts, if you call Valentine Roofing today, they can get your job started within 3 weeks of signing an agreement. They make the process super simple, really flexible financing options, because obviously it's a big expense, especially if you need to replace your entire roof. But they've helped thousands of Western Washington homeowners over the last, you know, since 2008. So they've been in business here for a long time. 206 Roofing. And remember, when you see the red vans, you know you're in good hands. Make sure to tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right. Speaking of the continued ice meltdown, you know, we basically every jurisdiction across the West Coast is in some stage of a budget crisis at the state level, county levels, city levels. And they clearly don't know what it means to budget. They don't know what it means to prioritize important things. And they will spend millions of dollars in the name of virtue signaling and social justice. And here's an example. King County hired a new employee whose only job will be to monitor ice flights from Boeing Field. Look, you could have somebody do that for free. Give them a pair of binoculars and set them up at the gate to Boeing Field and just have them watch.
You don't even need binoculars because on the King County website, it has multiple camera views of where the flights leave from. But also, and you can just sit there and watch your computer screen.
What are you going to do? Like, what are you going to do? You can't do anything.
Nope, you can't do anything. All they can do is track them.
I hate it so much. And what? For what purpose? says after years of activist complaints that King County's not doing enough to monitor immigration enforcement flights using its Seattle airport, the county has hired an employee who will ensure those flights follow safety regulations and count the number of handcuffed and shackled people coming on and off. So that's literally their job. And follow safety regulations. Like, what is their expertise in airline safety? The newly hired flight monitoring and outreach coordinator started recently at the airport. After months of training, her job is not exclusively focused on flights chartered by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, but all those with more than 18 passengers or involving buses taking passengers to and from planes, as well as various other duties.
Just to make sure that there's no federal.
Yeah. So it's just like, one person in handcuff, two people in handcuffs. Seattle Times goes on to say, there's no question the new position, likely one of very few of its kind in the country, taps into high-profile political and legal debate over the airport's role in immigration enforcement, especially during crackdowns launched by Donald Trump. His administration last year trumpeted the chain gang type restraints used on his immigrant passengers to illustrate his tough approach. I just can't. And flights per year have gone up pretty significantly from 2024, before he took office, that more than doubled in 2025, and it's on track to double again in 2026. Yeah. So anyway, okay. What do you want? What are the stupidest spending of money? It's like one, two. Yeah, we've got five people in shackles today. I'm just reporting.
And you know that is for sure six figures. Probably
it didn't say
almost two.
It didn't say in this.
It doesn't say in this.
And we looked for the job posting, and we couldn't find the specific job posting to be able to say what the pay and benefits were. Of course, they wouldn't say what the pay is. Probably because it's really high, and they know it looks stupid. Mm-hmm. All right, we head to Michigan. The University of Michigan really wants to ease college students into college, you know? I mean, we've been so chill on, you know, kids and grades and stuff in high school that all of a sudden if they go to college and you're grading them real harsh, bro, it's just going to kill their vibe. So I don't think that's how kids talk anymore. I'm trying to think of some more hip verbiage that
that's
kids
good,
use.
That's good.
Okay. It's just gonna kill, and it's probably like more 70s than trying to think of like some cool verbs. It's gonna kill their vibe. The University of Michigan doesn't want to kill their vibe. So they're not gonna use letter grades for freshmen in the fall. Some freshmen.
I think it's actually next fall, so like 27, but still.
Oh, okay, okay. Next
that's their new decision.
Fall. Their reason is that they want a new approach to curb the mental health crisis. from NPR, the University of Michigan trying a new approach to curb the mental health crisis among college-age students, covering freshmen's letter grades during their first semester. So covering them, they'll have it, but it won't. It says, starting in fall of 2027, students entering the university's College of Literature, Science, and Arts. Yeah, those are the kind of students who probably have a mental health crisis, will receive pass or no credit marks on their transcripts for the first semester instead of traditional letter grades. Their actual grades will still be kept internally. The university says the pilot program is intended to ease academic pressure, helping freshmen adjust to college and helping them start strong and curb the mental health crisis. First of all, there's a lot of reasons why college kids have our stress and anxiety. I can promise it's not over their grades. Mm-hmm. Maybe sometimes more like, do they make new friends when they went to college? They miss home. It's weird. Their friends aren't there. All their high school friends they left behind.
Social media.
A boy broke up with them. Social media, you know, all that stuff. Finally being out on their quote unquote own, having to maybe get a job. So you're never going to be able to quell the mental health crisis. Maybe a good idea would be to stop scaring the hell out of college kids about Donald Trump. And about the climate and all these existential dread that you instill. But it's also like you're supposed to be getting kids ready for the real world. And the real world you don't ease into the real world. It hits you like a truck. And so this idea that not knowing how they're actually performing and not having really any gauge for themselves is somehow going to help them in the real world is just so backward. And what happens after college? Who's going to help their mental health then? When they get to a new job and they're just out over their skis and they can't deal with it. They're going to get fired. And then they're really going to have a mental health crisis. So I don't know who thinks up this stuff. It's absolutely stupid, but I guess starting it on the arts students is probably the best place to start. No offense to the arts and crafts majors out there. Women's literature, also probably a good major to start that on. All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. First, a lot of listings on the market right now. So if you're thinking about selling your home, but you're kind of panicking because you're like, there's a lot of competition, I might not be able to get what I want for my home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, who told us recently, like, look, people are still looking for good homes. They're just being a little bit more picky.
Yeah, I mean, there's like 10 different markets going on.
Sure.
It's by city, it's by price point, it's by location. And there are some markets that are performing surprisingly well, but there's far more that are being challenged with longer days on market, with price drops, et cetera. We are going more towards a balanced market. Mm. It still can happen. You can sell your home for a lot of money. You've just got to try harder than you used to.
Yeah, and by try harder, he's going to try harder for you. And they have a great marketing plan to make sure that your listing stands out. And when he says try harder, I think it's a little more preparation, right? The success is in the preparation. And so even if you're just at the early stages of thinking about selling your home, make sure you reach out to Wes. Just ask him for a market analysis. He'll give you a lay of the land. He'll take a look at your home. You know, and if you want to move into the next phase, they do a pre-listing inspection. It's part of their Listing Boost Concierge service, where they're just getting everything ready, making sure they make necessary cosmetic upgrades that will make your home stand out and get you that money back on the back end. So it's all part of a very methodical process that Wes and his team employ to sell your home for top dollar. Wes Jones and Associates, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, comments from the live stream, shall we? Oh, and by the way, Locals is down today. I don't know what's going on with Locals, but if you are one of our Locals subscribers, I have not abandoned you, but it's down. Maybe it's a terror attack. Maybe it's down for routine maintenance, you know? I just don't know. But it's down, so I hope you found us anyway. All right, latest on the Puyol Bressler saga, Beth Winkler, this is absurd. How has it been allowed to get this far? Weak people. Weak people didn't speak up when they needed to speak up, and they allowed angry activists to dictate new policy that made no sense.
There's also just a reporting problem. That's a culture issue right now in schools, that they have a tendency to hide instead of report. And that needs to be nipped in the butt. From Heroism, I am so over the legality of all of this. What is so effing wrong with the girls, women having their own spaces? This is getting ridiculous. It was ridiculous a long time ago. It's not getting there.
Yeah. John Jacobson, I think he's trying to help me with lingo here. All this trans crap harshes my mellow. I remember saying that. It harshes my mellow, dude.
That might have been like early 2000s, maybe.
Yeah.
On the Katie recall, James Murphy says, even if she gets ousted, surely they will find someone even worse to take her place.
Seattle voters are really spastic, and they always go back and forth between like a commie and a liberal. Right. They never go really like a moderate, but commie and a liberal. Mm-hmm. Sasho, I'm curious why we aren't recalling all Democrats who voted for the unconstitutional income tax. And I agree with that, because they violated their oath of office by not following the Constitution of the state of Washington. So... All right, on violent crime rates going down nationally, Deb Z, if people quit reporting crimes because the PD doesn't respond, then the crime stats go down. Problem solved.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
An amazing rando. 3% is a lot considering how few cops we have currently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And there's been some violent attacks on law enforcement here. Bob, a lot of them from illegals.
Right.
Bob, Rottinghouse, Ferguson is not going to credit ICE, as their activity probably has had a positive effect.
I know. When you say... I mean, he was not specific with law enforcement, and law enforcement includes ICE, so you're welcome.
It does. You're welcome, buddy. Savannah, on the libraries.
Matt says, remember the pumpkin spice Narcan season is just around the corner.
Yeah, true.
I don't know. I think pumpkin spice is almost here. I think it hits in like a week or so.
I can't imagine right now today having a pumpkin spice latte. It makes me want to throw up because it's so hot out.
I like the ice ones.
I don't like iced coffee very much unless it's iced espresso. That's my only jam. I've been drinking tea lately, though.
You have. You've been very good.
Yeah, because coffee, I think that's part of why I was having so many tummy issues. I wouldn't eat anything for like the first 8 hours of the day, but I'd have like 4 shots of espresso. And I'm like, you know, maybe that's it.
Yeah.
So
could be.
Yeah. And I'm feeling okay. So, all right. Ryan, the OG, the people who voted for this, imagine families and children enjoying this space, yet turn a blind eye after they vote. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's not who's enjoying the libraries. You're paying for a beautiful building for drug addicts. It's just wild. On King County hiring a full-time ICE monitor.
Josh says, so we're paying for enforcement to monitor enforcement.
Yes. Yeah. That's John. What we do here. We're paying for enforcement to monitor enforcement. Yes. Devin Johnson, someone in government must have pulled a favor to get their cousin or buddy a job. Yeah, they just invent jobs for someone.
Oh, they do.
And it's a made-up job, so really you can make up the qualifications for the job as well.
Well,
part of the job is counting the number of people who board a plane. I would be great at it.
Can you imagine screwing that up? You had one job.
Sophie Cunningham would be great at it because she's
Yeah, and I do think that the first line in that Seattle Times article kind of says it all, where it says activists have been complaining. So who runs the show around here?
Yeah, activists.
The activists.
We also run the Seattle Times.
The leftiest of left activists.
Yeah, Brett.
Brett says person should do a live stream, but talk to a talk like the count from Sesame Street.
One illegal. Suzanne, I called Valentine today. They're coming out on Friday to inspect and provide an estimate. I love that. Make sure you tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided with me, Brandy Cruz. All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check and maybe a little bit of a bonus extra coming up next. First, Nicole's like, what? Tell me anything about that. First, I highly recommend getting a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. I think about retirement every single day. It has nothing to do with you guys. I love you very much. I will do this job as long as I have the mental capacity to continue to do it. However,
that could be maybe tomorrow.
2 more days. I don't know. Thanks, Nicole. Thank you very much. But, you know, I am dreaming of retirement and all the things that we want to do and accomplish, but a lot of that comes down to your retirement portfolio and your money manager. Mine's Zach Abraham with Bulwer Capital. He's also my mother's money manager. Two generations of Cruises, he manages their money. And Zach is great. And I think just getting a second opinion from him and his team, again, there's really no downside to it. There's no risk involved. He can go over how Bulwer Capital is always focused on risk management. They're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So get that second opinion today. Doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast YouTube channel and on all social media platforms. Again, just search Know Your Risk podcast and all that'll come out. All right. Not closing sanity check yet. Something very interesting happened this morning. The Public Disclosure Commission received a 16-page complaint against the Seattle Times, alleging that the Seattle Times violated state campaign finance laws by failing to disclose political advertising and in-kind support connected to the 2024 campaign against the initiative to repeal the Climate Commitment Act. The complaint, filed by one Ari Hoffman, is very detailed in scope. It explains how the Seattle Times gets funding for its climate lab reporting from outside influences that also opposed the repeal of the Climate Commitment Act, that the Seattle Times editorial board also weighed in on this, and that because they are commercial advertisers who are also offering their opinion on public policy, then, according to the rationale being used by the left to drag my name through the mud for the last 3 months, the Seattle Times name should also be dragged through the mud. Not that I had anything to do with this at all, of course. But I will say that this is one of many, 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 many PDC complaints to follow. That again, if the one against me is valid enough to continue on for 3 months and head to a formal investigation where they can subpoena my records and dig into my life where there's nothing to find, then certainly this information is enough to do the same thing to the Seattle Times, the Tacoma News Tribune, Cairo News Radio, every other opinion outlet in the state of Washington, The Stranger, Converge Media, you name it. All of them are going to get PDC complaints for every single time one of their hosts, one of their editorial boards, one of their columnists has taken a public position on any sort of policy issue or political action committee that is regulated by the Public Disclosure Commission. Because sometimes the only way to get to the correct conclusion is to fight fire with fire. And I will dive down into the dirty depths with them and roll in the mud. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Hey, I've gone to a spa and paid to roll in the mud before, okay? I'm paid to be covered in mud, so I get to do it for free, basically. All right, a DSA committee member says the U.S. Constitution is an obstacle that they need to get past.
goal. So the two things that we're famous for is our commitment to a program and our hatred of the United States Constitution.
Oh, hatred!
What the program does is it gives us a roadmap to revolution, and it gives us the obstacle that we finally will have to get over to have a revolution, which is the United States Constitution, the basis of the United States government. And what the minimum maximum program specifically, what that format specifically gives us is that roadmap. It gives us the minimum circumstances under which we would be able to take power and govern. And it gives us the maximum program, which is the goals that we're actually aiming for. It also clarifies democracy as both the end goal and as part of the process to get there, ensures the internal party democracy that we want to see in DSA. So it really wraps up the revolutionary tradition of democracy that I think socialism and abolitionism in the United States have always been a part of, and aims it, you know, at a future that we can live in as a human species, because I think absent a revolutionary democratic socialist republic in North America, we may not have a livable future.
Where do they find these people? Where do they find these people? Can you imagine being a United States citizen and advocating for the abolition of the one document that enshrines your inherent rights on this earth? These people have lost their minds because they want to be essentially the arbitrator of what rights you have, what life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness means. And God forbid that day ever comes. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Appreciate every single one of you, as always. Just a slight bit more appreciation for our paid subscribers who help support our show for $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show. If you've been just coasting on free episodes, you know, maybe it's time to think about just that $5 a month. I know times are tight right now. If you can't afford it, you can't afford it. But if you can, you just haven't signed up, maybe contemplate it. All right, we'll see you back here tomorrow at noon Pacific time for our final live show of the week. Toodaloo.